EWA for life.
Going on, everyone. Welcome back to Smart Mark Talk, brought to you by Elite Wrestling Audio, the only podcast for the professional wrestling fan inside of you. It's your boy Val Cisco, aka Lucha Val, and we have a lot to talk about today, so let's get started with the week that was in the world of professional wrestling. All right, so let's kick off with one of the biggest things that happened this week, Dominic Mysterio, the first superstar to main event Raw, NXT, and SmackDown within 1 week, and my oh my, has this kid been on a roll. We got to see not only him go for the Undisputed Tag Team Championships on Monday Night Raw, but we saw him win the NXT North American Championship, taken away from that man that is Wes Lee, with a pretty decent championship run. So this impromptu title change really happened, and I think it sparked interest, but also confused a lot of people when it comes to the NXT storylines as well, too. And of course, we got to see him defend that said championship on SmackDown against Pete Dunne. So, Dominic, man, the dude is on fire this week. This is probably the best he's looked in a very long time. This is the year for Dominic to break out, maybe even drop the last name and just try to make his way, do his own thing, and kind of separate himself from Mysterio legacy and just become Dirty Dom. But that's just my two cents on it. What does this mean for NXT and the North American Championship? Well, definitely we got the buzz for the week. You know, they're going to capitalize on that as much as possible. They mean the WWE, pronouns, pal. And you know, it all depends on how you look at things. I'm a stickler when it comes to stories. So the fact that we were getting this Mustafa Ali versus Wes Lee battle at the Great American Bash, which is happening this weekend coming up, was excited for the rehab of Ali. But this really, it throws a monkey wrench. Maybe not too much, and maybe this is a situation where we could see Dom drop the title back at the Great American Bash to either Wesley or Ali. But man, it does confuse the viewer if you are strictly a NXT devotee. So we're gonna have to see this coming Tuesday what happens, what plays out. I could definitely see this as a short-term investment just to capitalize on some buzz before SummerSlam. Maybe put Dominic in a better situation come SummerSlam, but I don't see him holding that title for very long. On Monday Night Raw, we got to see the epic encounter of Brock Lesnar coming out and demolishing Cody Rhodes in Atlanta, Georgia, in front of his family, his home, his friends, everyone. And okay, we definitely saw that the crowd was hot for Cody Rhodes. This is his hometown in Atlanta. But the thing that had us cracking up the most was Cody Rhodes' mom. Mama Rhodes out there has been in the business long enough where she seemed unfazed with this. Maybe the constant battles with her late husband, and then seeing other things happen in the wrestling business as well too, probably has her numb to the whole shebang. But nonetheless, it was good to see some physical contact between Brock Lesnar and Cody Rhodes, and making the match official for SummerSlam, although there is no stipulation. Now, a lot of people have been saying for the third match, the rubber match, that there should be a high-stakes situation, stipulation for that in Detroit. But I don't know. For me, I just feel like, you know, maybe a good old 1-2-3 wrestling feud works. I mean, they already had him being Cody Rhodes, pin Brock Lesnar clean. They had Brock Lesnar pin Cody Rhodes. Why not make the third match a clean match? which can elevate Cody Rhodes as well too, not needing the crutch of weapons or a gimmick match to get over. So maybe we'll see tomorrow on Monday Night Raw if anything comes out of that, but definitely I don't think there needs to be a stipulation, especially when we have a high-stakes stipulation coming on SmackDown. We're going to stick on Raw for a second because a couple of things I want to talk about. Seth freaking Rollins, we do know that he is battling some injuries and he needs to undergo some kind of surgery sooner than later. It all depends on what he wants to do at this point, if he wants to work through him till Mania or if he wants to kind of cut it short, maybe come back before Mania. It all depends on him, but he has been battling these injuries. And one thing this podcast we talk about a lot, being myself and my boy Jay, quality over quantity. Are we seeing Seth Rollins defend the newly World Heavyweight Championship way too much? Whether it's on NXT, whether it's on live events, whether it's at Monday Night Raw, it just seems there's too many frequent title defenses, and it kind of dilutes the importance of the championship. You're trying to make this one of the top belts in the company equal to the undisputed championship that Roman Reigns carries, but at this point it's not really the title that makes the man's making the title when it comes to Roman Reigns. When it comes to Seth Rollins and the new World Heavyweight Championship, I definitely feel like he's really doing his best to rehab that title to make it feel important, to make it feel like it is something, the crown jewel, if you will, for those to go after. But circumstances kind of hurt this situation. Not only do you have Seth Rollins' frequent title defenses, you also have things like Roman Reigns and a better storyline really taking over the WWE, and that alone trumps that title. Other comments like Cody Rhodes saying that he wouldn't want to go after that title because the main story is the WWE Championship, Universal Championship, Undisputed, however you want to call it right now. That's the title he wants to focus on. And that comment alone, while it's not a total diss to the World Heavyweight Championship, it really is a backhanded compliment. Because this should be a crown jewel right there for the WWE, especially on the brand that you are on right now. So the fact that in the last couple of months, these certain things have affected that championship, it might be time to maybe take it off of Seth Rollins and put it in a storyline to elevate it. Maybe the man right now, as in Seth Rollins, cannot do it alone. Maybe it needs to have a nice storyline to elevate the status of that championship, a la Finn Balor, Damian Priest, and the Judgment Day. While that stable is not as hot as the Bloodline these days, it has been growing, whether it's the fan base, whether it's storyline, hell, whether it's crowd reactions. All of them seem to be getting some kind of reaction. You have the Dominic's Mysterio situation and the blow up that he's had over the last week. You have the blow up of Damian Priest in the last 2 weeks winning Money in the Bank, Rhea Ripley and her Women's World Championship, and Finn Balor constantly mistrusting the Judgment Day and possibly Jordan Devlin in the background joining the Judgment Day as well too. Sorry, JD Madonna. We have all these factors revolving around that stable that may be throwing the World Heavyweight Championship on Finn, since the match is official for SummerSlam. Maybe that can cause more dissension, more deceit, and more trouble going forward for the Judgment Day. And them fighting over that main championship might elevate it as well too. I don't know, I'm not a booker, I'm a fan, but at the end of the day, I see what I see, and I think fans see that as well too. Maybe it's time to give Seth Rollins a break, let him heal up, and come back with a new focus and a new attitude with this title. Let's make our way to NXT. As I said, Dominic Mysterio taking the NXT North American Championship away from Wesley. We talked about how we feel about Ali, possibly, I don't know, maybe out of the picture when it comes to that title. Now for Great American Bash, maybe they'll make it a triple threat and make Dominic Mysterio the one to take the pin, so that way Wesley doesn't take another L. I don't know. Very strange, but if you take that out of the equation right now, NXT has been so great over the last couple of months, whether it's the match quality, the characters coming back. Who knew that Tony D'Angelo and my man Chad and Tatum over here would definitely get over the way they've been getting over lately. I like the fact that they feel like a smooth tag team. If anything, they both feel equal at this point in time. No one feels bigger than the other, and I could definitely see them going for the tag team titles down the line as well. Man, oh man, the women of NXT are fantastic. Different characters, different people with different storylines. You have Tiffany Stratton with the NXT Women's Championship. Great for the position she's in. She made a little cameo appearance on SmackDown in the crowd as well too, so showing her importance. The nice little feud between Blair Davenport and Roxanne Perez has been fantastic as well too, elevating Blair Davenport, putting her in a top tier picture, while as well giving Roxanne a much needed edge. I think the nice girl next door really was falling flat for a tad bit. There's only so many times you can have that plea of trying to be the best, trying to be the one, trying to be the greatest of all time. Sometimes you need that edge, and I think Blair is the best person right now to give her that edge. So let's see what's going on going forward in that feud. And now we're going to move our way up to AEW. Seems that both nights on AEW, actually all three nights for AEW, had some kind of progress going for stories, either that led to the weekend, to a pay-per-view, or to some stakes later on as well too. Blood and Guts happened this last Wednesday, and I gotta say, this was a fun Blood and Guts. Doesn't matter how the finish went, I definitely feel that this was a focused Blood and Guts. I feel like everyone had a central focus in the match, and it felt like it wasn't just bloodshed for the bloodshed. It was demonic and it was devious when it comes to like glass and forks and things of that nature, and I know our boy Jay is a little upset about that after the latest Dark Side of the Ring focusing on Abdullah the Butcher and what's happening with blood loss in the ring and hepatitis C. He was all over the place when it comes to that, but I gotta say the color helped. The cage looked great. The feud was great as well too. The match was excellent. And just having Wheeler Yuta as a sacrificial lamb, I loved it. I love seeing exactly the Elite having that bit of an edge, not being the cookie cutter baby faces that have been portrayed over the last couple weeks. We saw that edge there choking out Wheeler Yuta, which was a graphic scene to be shown on TBS. We'll see if there's any repercussions for that. We'll see if Warner / Discovery loves the shit out of AEW's violence. I think knowing that this match was promoted so heavily, especially with the Shark Week logos everywhere, I think there's some synergy there, and I think with the blood, Shark Week, and everything all together, I think Warner / Discovery is pretty happy with the product. We got to see the Elite and the Blackpool Combat Club go ahead and shake hands right afterwards, so it does seem like that feud is over and done with. But we got to see a nice little feud play out, which led into our pay-per-view that happened this weekend as well too for ROH. We saw Pac leave the ring, since he was part of the Blackpool Combat Club's team, if you will, and some miscommunication happened between him and Claudio. And it seemed that because of that walk-off, a challenge was made for the World Championship for ROH. And I like the setup due to Mark Briscoe being injured and not being able to main event that pay-per-view. This was a nice choice, a fresh choice as well too. A great challenger with different styles as well too, which we'll talk about that in a little bit as well too, how I felt about ROH and their pay-per-view. But it was a nice little pivot. We left the Elite, and now we're going to try to do something different. So I'm interested to see what happens for the future of the Blackpool Comic Club. And, of course, the Elite. What do they have to do? Do they have to do anything anymore? We've heard a quote recently that the Young Bucks feel like they've done everything they need to do in AEW. And this is very true. We look at the Young Bucks, and we look at the tag team division. They've won the tag team titles. They have main evented so many times on many shows when it comes to AEW. What more? What ceiling can they break through at this point? And where would you guys like them to go if that's the case? After looking at Blood and Guts, it does seem like, I don't know, I'm not one to body shame whatsoever because I'm a husky dude myself, but it doesn't seem like Matt and Nick are looking to make a way for a WWE or whatnot. It just seems like they may be taking it slow and enjoying the fruits of the labor, as maybe being somewhere in the backstage. I don't know. I could be definitely wrong. Maybe they just want to go back home and enjoy their families, which is just fine as well, too. They've been hustling for so long. Maybe they need a due break with their families as well, too. But if you guys do want to see them in an organization, hit up the chats. Let us know on Twitter at EliteWrestlingAudio.com, at Instagram at EliteWrestlingAudio, and on Facebook at EliteWrestlingAudio. Let us know how you feel about that, or even in the comments if you want the Young Bucks to go to a place like a WWE, like a NXT, like MLW, things of that nature. Go back to New Japan Pro Wrestling. Who knows? It'll be interesting. Kenny Omega is still with the Don Callis feud, which I think is the hottest thing for Dynamite right now. I think Don Callis is strong with the heat these days, especially with the likes of Takeshita being involved in his stable, Chris Jericho possibly being involved with his stable as well, too, as the Jericho Appreciation Society crumbles before his face. A lot of great things happening with Don Callis, and I hope there's something in the mist in the next couple of weeks that we can all sink our teeth into. That'll be very interesting. Hopping off of Dynamite, we go right into Impact Wrestling, and we saw the fruits of our labor right there with the newly crowned Impact Tag Team Champions for the Knockout Division. Killer Kelly and Marsha Slamovich being the beast that they are. I'm very happy to see what they are doing right now for that division. They are mean sisterhood, beating the hell out of everyone, rough and tough. And I think, honestly, if you keep these titles on for at least a couple months to 6 months, they could wreck havoc. And it's only going to make them better. Much better. Not that much to really write home about Impact Wrestling, though. I mean, we still have a lot of feuds happening, whether it's the Rascals against, you know, Bay and Austin. You know, Alex Shelley's still in the mix right there with Josh Alexander and Nick Aldis in limbo at this moment in time. I heard that there was some strong interest with the WWE in capturing Nick Aldis, and with the WWE's trajectory these days of having this limelight be put on the older wrestlers, not too old or anything like that, just more veteran wrestlers, I think it might be a great time to incorporate a Nick Aldis, especially if you're trying to do an NXT Euro, not just a UK, but Euro. He could be tailor-made for that, or if he just wants to be shot up to the main roster, which everybody believes he should, I think he'd be a welcome addition to a Raw or a SmackDown. I think him and Cody Rhodes would have a great feud. They do have history right there. Maybe him and Roman Reigns could jab it up a bit on the microphone as well, too. There's a lot of good qualities with Nick Aldis if they treated him with the respect he deserves. But knowing the WWE, they might put him as an announcer, which is not bad either, as well, too. Hey, you gotta make the money somehow, right? Let's pivot over to SmackDown, because SmackDown, guys, although we had a couple of good matches, we had that Fatal 4-Way to get into the next spot for the United States Championship match, which Rey Mysterio did win, and we got to see also Santos Escobar pin the champion Austin Theory as well, too. So the LWO making their way for the United States Championship. Will this culminate at SummerSlam, possibly that triple threat match with them? Not sure. We'll see what happens with that, or maybe more dissension between Santos and Rey Mysterio down the line. So I could definitely see that. Maybe Santos doesn't get the win for the US strap, but Rey does, and we pivot over there. We got to see finally announced for SummerSlam, speaking about triple threats, it will be Charlotte Flair, Bianca Belair, and Asuka for the newly WWE Championship, Asuka's WWE Women's Championship, and that should be a fun match. Asuka, guys, you're going to have to help me out here. Asuka does feel very bland since coming back at the Royal Rumble. Everyone had all these high hopes of the psycho evil clown gimmick making her more devious and, I don't know, crazier than she normally is. We were predicting more mind games coming out of her, but if anything, it looked like a palette swap. And I think there were some shades of deviousness and craziness happening with her, but not to the extent that we saw in Japan whatsoever. I mean, this is very much a tame version. Like I said, maybe even non-existent. It's mostly the same Asuka that we were getting before, just with a new hairstyle, a new coat of paint on her face. So, will they be taking the title off of Asuka? Interesting. I'm not too sure. Will they be putting him back on Bianca Belair? I don't think so. I think Bianca is trying to see where she is right now, the crowd will accept her as a full-blown heel, or they need to pivot her back as a babyface. I can see the safe bet, the safe option, bringing it right back to Charlotte Flair. Bringing it to Charlotte Flair and making her the woman of the hour, too sweet to be sour. I could definitely see that happening at SummerSlam. But what we're really here to talk about is a segment between Jey Uso and the Tribal Chief, Roman Reigns, in their upcoming match at SummerSlam, making it official as well too. Not just a normal match, with both of them going back and forth on the microphone, signing a contract. This will be a tribal warfare match. What that entails, I have no idea. I know there was some circulation going down the internet sphere that it may be a match that kind of resembles Raw Underground, or possibly a fight pit. But from what Jey Uso was saying on this segment, that I can hit you with sticks or tables and this or that, so it might just be a street fight or extreme rules match with a different coat of paint. I hope not. I hope that it gets a little bit more original, some theatrics as well too. I like the fact that they're bringing their family involved. When Jey Uso was calling for this match, you know, Roman was surprised, saying, "Does the elders know about this?" And Jey Uso was like, "Yeah, it was their idea." So maybe we can incorporate some of the family to be in this match, or at least bear witness to this match as well too. That would be very interesting. And then we have Collision. I mean, Collision, a very interesting show when it comes to different things. We just got to see Bullet Club Gold get the win, a much needed win. Keeping them very strong on Collision. I think AEW Collision does know how to, number one, I will say this, we talk about this all the time, Collision feels like there is a direction to it. They've got their heels, they got their baby faces, they have the direction that they want to go. Bullet Club Gold feels very important on Collision. You bring the Dynamite, I'm not too sure, but Collision, they seem like the main heel act there. Love to see what they could do for the future, but I love the tandem that they have so far. We have Billy Gunn possibly retiring, leaving his boots in the ring, so I'm not too sure if this is an angle or if this is real. You guys gotta let us know on how you feel about that, because it does seem like the ass man will be hanging it up pretty soon. But do you agree? Do you still think there's some value for the one Billy Gunn? Or do you think his time has ran out for the world of professional wrestling? We also got to see CM Punk in a different segment, which I'm very happy for. This actually makes a lot of sense. We don't want to put him in the main title picture, but possibly in the TNT title picture. I appreciate that, with Christian Cage and Luchasaurus interrupting CM Punk, and possibly a feud down the line between these three individuals. I love to see Christian Cage and CM Punk go at it on their microphone. These are veterans right here. Christian Cage is hot as hell every time he's on TV, as far as mic work and in-ring work as well too. The dude is living up to the moniker. He does outwork everyone when he's on the screen. So I appreciate the man. I think the dude can really ignite a awesome feud on the microphone, as he's the mouthpiece for the champion Luchasaurus. So I could definitely see Punk maybe beating Luchasaurus down the line and holding that title for TNT and making that the main title for Collision, which that would speak volumes right there. That would definitely help rehab that title to a main title status. I think we need that. I definitely feel like we need that. That would be great. And that really is it for Collision right there. I mean, not a lot came out of it. Let's just give our thoughts about the show of the week right now. In my opinion, if I'm going back and forth and I'm looking at quality over quantity, if I'm looking at match importance, if I'm looking at the reaction, the buzz that came out of things, I'm going NXT. I think the matches on NXT were fire, especially was it Lotharios and the Dragon Lee and then Fletcher match. I think that right there was probably one of the matches of the week right there. The shocking moment of the week being Dominic Mysterio winning the NXT North American Championship, and of course the wrestler of the week being Dominic Mysterio, in my opinion, because he has main evented all three brands and had the most buzz coming out the week in a buzz-worthy week. Look at it, guys. Blood and Guts, ROH pay-per-view, a lot happening with Collision as well too. Like, a lot of things were happening. The Tribal Chief and the Tribal Warfare, Brock Lesnar and Cody Rhodes. The thing that stuck out the most was Dominic Mysterio. So I gotta say that, man, Dominic Mysterio being the number one man of the week, too sweet to be sour. And I dare anyone disagree right there. But that is a wrap up of the week right there. Stay tuned as we give our thoughts on ROH Death Before Dishonor. All right. Thanks for coming back, guys. Let's talk about it. ROH Death Before Dishonor happened Friday, July 21st, 2023. And of course, this was from good old Trenton, New Jersey at the Cure Insurance Arena. Excitement. Even though some matches weren't really announced until like the last 2 weeks of the event, I think these ROH pay-per-views have been pretty fun. Of course, the commentators, Ian Riccaboni, Caprice Coleman, and Stokely Hathaway for certain matches as well, too. Gotta say, love the energy between the commentary crew. I think all of them complement each other pretty well. They're not your conventional announce team. They make mistakes, and they're okay with their mistakes. They're natural. It feels like an actual conversation rather than a script. And I think that's what gives them the edge over a lot of commentators these days. A lot of storylines that were going into this pay-per-view, especially with Mark Briscoe being one of them, trying to challenge for the ROH World Championship, a title that he has never won before, against Claudio Castagnoli, but did not work out because an unforeseen injury happened to Mark Briscoe, leading the champion without a challenger. We got to see that all unveil at Blood and Guts as Pac and Claudio did have some miscommunication, some words and physicality before Pac walking out on the match, almost costing the BCC the match itself. So this leads into that match right there, a couple other storylines that really got into it, but let's just say this, let's talk about some basic things first. Let's look at the arena. I think the arena was fun. It looked semi-full, but it was dark enough for it to feel very important. I still love how the production has been for ROH. It feels crisp. It feels nice. This is the level of production we need for ROH. Not the graininess, and I know there's a certain aesthetic to that, but I think the production has been spot on. I think the crowd was very hot, especially New Jersey being a hotbed for professional wrestling, but the Trenton crowd was hot as well too. They knew the wrestlers. I was a little concerned about one thing, and I just don't know if this is something that the new regime of ROH does not want or does want, but they certainly don't encourage it as they used to when it was under Sinclair Broadcasting. Streamers. We saw a few of them inside the ring, but not to the degree that we used to see, I want to say 5 to 6 years ago. And like I said, I'm not too sure if this is a thing that the new regime are trying to like X out, or if they're just not even mentioning it and the crowd the crowd maybe not sure on what to do. Should they be throwing it? Should they not be throwing it? Will they get in trouble? I think that right there has been a little small question mark when it comes to the fan base and the wrestlers for ROH, but nonetheless, it was a fun looking event. We had an awesome pre-show lined up. Josh Woods taking on Tracy Williams, defeating him by submission, which we might see Josh Woods as the next challenger to the ROH Pure Championship, a former Pure Champion himself. Action Andrade and Darius Martin taking on and defeating the Workhorsemen in the pre-show as well too. legit Layla Hirsch defeating Trish Adora by submission, and AR Fox defeating Shane Taylor on the pre-show as well too. Let's talk about that real quickly. The ascension of AR Fox, a wrestler which I don't know. Let me take a sip of my drink real quickly. Sorry, guys. I see the appeal, but then I don't. He has the wrestling work. He has the facial expressions. The way he sells is really well. But can I get into the look? Can I get into the character? I'm still not sure. I think I could get into it more in ROH than I did in AEW, like a Dynamite or a Collision. So to see him here in ROH, it just makes a little bit more sense, a little bit more believable. I'm happy to see where he is in the next 6 months. I think I'll be very positive to see him be maybe a champion in something, whether it's tag team, whether it's six man, maybe even a TV champion at one point. I could see that definitely happening in ROH. It's just that transition from ROH back to AEW, that's what I'm concerned about. Will the fan base really accept him? Just with the gimmick alone, or maybe there'll be some good synergy on the way with that. Who knows? But I think the main question here is, why is my man Shane Taylor taking all these L's lately? If you would have told me that Shane Taylor would be at the lowest of the totem pole these days 2 years ago, I'd punch you in the mouth. Only because that Shane Taylor Productions, was one of the biggest things, not only in ROH, but in indie wrestling altogether. Shane Taylor was set to be a big star, the champion probably of ROH, or at least the biggest thing in indie wrestling, and something happened where it just did not work out. I'm not too sure, guys. Maybe you're going to have to help me out. I know some people are not that invested in him, or maybe not invested as a singles competitor now without the posse behind him. I do feel like ROH is missing something right now, because he is a dominant wrestler. He has the character work, he has the mic work, he has the wrestling. Maybe his time has passed, but you know what? Get a couple of dudes with him again, and let's try to recreate Shane Taylor Productions, and we could take this somewhere, man. You know, I know that we have Swerve with Mogul Embassy, but probably botched that 3 times right there. But I don't know, maybe a Swerve and Shane Taylor, that's something I could get I could get behind right there. But it just sucks to see Shane Taylor at the bottom of the totem pole. The actual pay-per-view started off with Gravity taking on Commander in a Lucha Libre spectacle a la ECW. This very much felt like an ECW event, where we had our different type of matches, from our pure wrestling to our Lucha Libre to our hardcore in a way. Very interesting, and it felt like this, especially this match. This paid tribute to the likes of like a Rey Mysterio Jr. versus Psicosis in ECW in a way, with Gravity defeating Commander, which I'm a little shocked about, because Commander seemed like he was getting pushed in every show that he was on, whether it was winning or losing. It felt like he was being groomed to be the next big luchador for AEW, but Gravity takes the win, and they announced that Gravity would be taking on Pac on Dynamite coming this week as well too, so that should be a very interesting match as well. We got to see, for our first championship match of the night, Samoa Joe defeating Dalton Castle with the boys by technical submission. And interestingly enough, we had Stokely Hathaway in this, and I think we're definitely seeing that feud, or at least that, I wouldn't say feud, but that storyline, excuse me, with Stokely and his favoritism, or feeling intimidated by Samoa Joe running the show in a way, play out in this match, as Stokely Hathaway saves Samoa Joe from possibly losing this match after Dalton was just belly to bellying the shit out of this guy, pardon my French. He had the boys ejected out the arena, a low blow, and then a coquina clutch to have the pass out victory for Samoa Joe, celebrating, relishing in his victory, and relishing the fact that he has something over Stokely Hathaway, as he looked scared while making these decisions, as Stokely Hathaway is your quote-unquote GM of ROH right now. Our second tag team title match, sorry, our second title match of the night was for the ROH Tag Team Championships, and I love the fact that we had a segment showing the importance of these titles, the history behind these titles, being the Briscoes, the Lucha Bros, FTR, so on and so forth, and what these titles mean not only to ROH but to the team that actually holds them as well too. So they really big up these titles to the fact that they made these like the main attraction or main attraction match, that this could main event any ROH show possible as well too. But for right now, this right here is the second match of the night, sorry, third. Aussie Open, which is Kyle Fletcher and Mark Davis, defeated the Lucha Bros, Penta and Rey Fénix, also defeating The Kingdom, Matt Taven and Mike Bennett, and defeating Best Friends, Trent Beretta and Chuck Taylor. Interesting. Balls-to-wall match. Dare I say it might be my favorite match because of the fact that everyone meshed so well. Lucha Bros are always going to give an outstanding performance. I think if you're looking at an MVP team for AEW, or even now ROH, the Lucha Bros probably would be, if we're looking like a 10 years down line, a Hall of Fame for AEW, I think Lucha Bros are first to be inducted because of all the memorable matches they've had in AEW. Hell, going back into All In as well too. So much history with this team, and I keep on saying this to whether it's my boy Jay, other people as well too. If you think their tag team work is so good, wait till they break up and actually have that feud together, because their feud together is even better and more dramatic and noteworthy and violent as well too. And I think they're just saving that. They're saving that for something huge. I would hope so, but the Lucha Bros. I always felt like they were gonna be a transitional tag team champions for ROH because they work so many other places that maybe they're not too focused on Ring of Honor. That being said, they brought out a hell of a match. Taven and Bennett, always great. I think they're a well-oiled machine. They seem flawless as a tag team. They really do feel like they're lost a tad bit as singles competitors. Matt Taven being a former ROH world champion at the time where ROH was suffering the most, so I think he has rubbed that stank off a tad bit as the new iteration of the Kingdom has emerged from Impact going to Dynamite and now ROH. And Best Friends, I'm torn a tad bit, and help me out guys, you guys could respond in the comments section, whether it's the Apple Podcast, Spotify, the Facebook, the Twitter. How do you feel about Best Friends? Have they run their course a tad bit? Has the party run its course? When I say that, it's that I feel like there was a certain time for Best Friends to get over. Maybe a couple years back, especially the pandemic era, they were a reliable tag team that had awesome feuds with Santana Ortiz and other people as well too. Their triple tag team tandem is great with Orange Cassidy as well. It's just Orange became the breakout star and they were kind of left in the dust, and anytime that they had opportunities for the tag team titles in AEW, they fell short multiple times, to the point where you don't even feel like they belong, but it's not believable for them to win in matches, which is sad, unless Orange Cassidy's with them, which is even equally sad. So, being in ROH, I'm actually happy for that. I wouldn't say this is where they belong, but right now, as far as a tag team, I mean, they're great. They're a veteran tag team. They can pull an audience, whether it's big or small. They can transition that audience from Dynamite to ROH very easily without Orange Cassidy. And I can see them as champions down the line as well, too. If given the opportunity to wrestle as much as they can on ROH TV, definitely they could be champions. Hell, I could see Trent Beretta being a world champion for ROH as well. I think the dude's a stud. I think the dude always has been a stud. He's always in shape. He has great wrestling techniques. The dude has decent mic work. A sympathetic baby face. Dude can go. But I think the thing that everyone wants to talk about is Aussie Open. Look at their year so far, man. You know, whether it being IWGP World Tag Team Champions, whether it's New Japan Open, what's it, New Japan Strong Tag Team Champions, excuse me, and now going into ROH as ROH World Tag Team Champions out of this match, I think Aussie Open, the sky's the limit for them. You give these boys a legit run for a couple of months, yeah, I could see anyone trying to grab hold of these guys, because they may not look aesthetically like your natural tag team. You have one that's a little bit more huskier than the other one, but these guys can go, and anywhere that they do go to, they have an excellent, stellar match. I think them being aligned with Will Ospreay helps as well too, but the fact that they are internationally known for all the way from Japan to the States helps them, and having these titles only raises their stock as a tag team unit. So the sky's the limit for those guys. Going in to the next match, Mogul Embassy, Brian Cage, Bishop Khan, and Toa Lioa, a Puerto Rican Samoan, with Prince Nana by their side, taking on and defeating, and what I like to say is a glorified jobber match, because it is. They gave these guys too much time, but Leon Ruffin, our boy Master Wado, and our boy, I'm going to probably botch his name, Taguchi, there we go. Taguchi, a very like respected veteran in the world of New Japan Pro Wrestling. Master Wado, one of the guys that are coming up. I know our boy Jay loves Master Wado as well too. For the ROH six men tag team championships, guys, yes, it was a showcase for Mogul Embassy, or the Embassy, to go ahead and wreak havoc. But I did feel like these small guys, like a Leon Ruffin, even though, you know, he wrestles big, I feel like this was a match just to showcase the Embassy, as we have been. But I've been waiting for a legit match for the Embassy, like a legit feud to come out. And I feel like these semi-squash matches don't help. I mean, the match went 12 minutes, so it definitely wasn't a squash. But for the most part, like, does this match need to happen? Possibly not. Could this match have been given to somebody else? Possibly. Could we see a better feud with a three-man tag team tandem happen in ROH? Definitely. It's just we need to, like, really dig in deep, and this is where a Shane Taylor Productions really comes into fruition, if we were to go down that route again. Or someone down in the likes of that. I know we are trying to establish two titles on two different brands, if you will. We have, you know, the AEW Trios Tag Team Championships, and then we have the six-man tag team championships at ROH. And I know you can kind of fluctuate stars back and forth, but I know how hard it is to make those legitimate tag teams. But we need something for the Embassy, because they just can't be like this big brooding force, because all it feels like is like we're so masculine, we're so beefy, we're so big that we can't look, we'll self-combust, if you will. We're just gonna self-combust, and we're all gonna attack each other, and we're all gonna break up, we're gonna damage each other within, because no one can damage us as a unit. I feel like that's what's gonna happen. Anyway, Brian Cage looking bigger and better, as we've seen. Wolverine, as he calls himself, looks great. But as our boy Toa Lioa, that took the win. Very devastating match. The next match going into it was a match between Shibata taking on Daniel Garcia for the Pure Wrestling ROH Championship. I botched that whole thing right there. ROH Pure Championship. In a Pure Wrestling Rules match. Shibata looking fantastic with that title. I know we were saying in the last podcast that he felt very non-existent, but a lot of those doubts of where he lies for ROH or where his allegiance lies were put to rest after this match with a post-event comment that he made. But the match was decent. I mean, we were saying this, me and Jay were saying this, that Daniel Garcia has been having a hard time trying to figure himself out as entertainer or as that professional PWG type wrestler. I know he's trying his best to mash it in, and for some, in some ways, the crowd is behind him. He gets a pop with the little dance that he's doing, and that dance has been very profound in all his matches, especially with the finish of this match as well. But there is something that just screams that it's maybe we should pivot away from that and make him more of a serious wrestler, because in a match like this against Shibata, did we need the theatrics from him? Not so much. We needed the Dragon Slayer, and we really didn't get that in this match, especially toward the finish. Shibata, you know, doing a combination of the PK kick and then into the rear naked choke again, and basically Daniel Garcia passing out while doing the little dance jig, so gyrating while he has a rear naked choke on him. Just didn't sit well for me. I know it made the audience laugh, but is that what we really need? Like, we have enough wrestlers that have that comedic performance. Does Daniel Garcia need that? Is he more of a joke than he is a wrestler? We're going to have to see. But Shibata does get the win. Shibata did quote on say that he's looking to separate himself from Japan and trying to do, or at least the LA Dojo, and be more ROH AEW focused. And I think that's a big step for Shibata right there, putting his focus on ROH and building it in within. I think that's a great addition, and for him having that title, taking out all challengers like a Josh Woods next, it's only going to elevate that title even more. So happy to see that happen. The next match, I think, was Jay's favorite match, which was the Dark Order, Evil Uno, Alex Reynolds, and John Silver taking on the Righteous, Stu Grayson, Vincent, and Dutch. Interesting fight. Interesting. This is what it was. It was a fight without honor match. Basically, their street fight, if you will. Very brutal match. Glass, Legos, chair shots galore, tables. Hell, the first segment we got was a table spot. Evil Uno looking pumped up, and I believe it was for his birthday as well, too. It was Evil Uno's birthday, so happy birthday, Evil Uno. Taking on his longtime Super Smash Brothers tag team, and it's Stu Grayson. I just wish that we felt more for this feud. I believe if you're watching, you know, ROH TV on Honor Club on a week-to-week basis, you're going to maybe get that. For those that don't, or maybe just don't want to have the paywall in front of them to watch ROH, I can see them feeling so lost, or maybe knowing the history between these guys and not really feeling the stakes. But it was a fun match anyway. Brutal, bloody. You know, there's parts where Evil Uno's mask was half ripped off, and there's a gash in his forehead coming out of it. The Lego spots with the power bombs, continuous power bombs on the Legos as well. Sue was devious as well. A ladder spot through the table. There's a lot of great stuff in this match. I just hope that people cared enough to remember this match. You know, Impact does this a lot, where they have these high-stake, like, car crash type matches, but do we remember them within a year or a month? That's the biggest concern, right? So, I mean, I can't speak highly enough about The Righteous. I think, you know, the WWE missed out their mark on them right there. I know that he has, Vincent, he pronounced Bao, has a lot of similarities to one Bray Wyatt. And I think there was a way to separate that, or at least Vincent, from that character as well, too. And I think he's been trying in ROH to kind of bring that character back since Bray Wyatt has been semi non-existent on TV lately. The opportunity is there for him. It's just for the crowd. Can the crowd really accept that type of character not being Bray Wyatt? So it's interesting because he has a look, he has vocabulary, he has the sound in his promos, he has the entrance. It's just, can a crowd buy into a character like this that's not Bray Wyatt? That's going to be the challenge right there. Anyways, it was your boys, the Dark Order, who do seem a little lost right now, get the W over the Righteous. Dark Order, man. From being the worst act to start off AEW, to being one of the most hottest acts with the late, great Brody Lee, to being such a babyface tag team tandem with, our boy Hangman Page, to now almost feeling a little non-existent. They went from flirting to be heels again to ROH, and it's never their work. They're all of them great workers. We thought that our boy Johnny Hungry was going to be the best thing in wrestling, and it does seem like they've been passed over a tad bit, especially knowing that they're a three-man unit. Why aren't they going for trios titles? But maybe that's what we're going to be seeing next. Maybe we could see something like the Dark Order take on the Embassy, and that could be a challenging match for the Embassy. That would actually have stakes right there. So that's my vote. If we're going to throw teams together, let's throw those two trios teams and let them go to war. All right, now for our co-main event, which we got so excited for because we were like, hey, what happened to the women's match? Were the women not going on tonight? Did something happen that we didn't know? But we found out that the women were going to get the main event for this pay-per-view, and we couldn't be more happier. I couldn't be more happier. But the match that we did get was for the ROH World Championship between Pac and Claudio Castagnoli. And this match, 18 minutes, almost 19 minutes into it, fantastic back and forth struggle between both wrestlers that seemed to not like each other whatsoever. Their hate protruded in this match. It was downright a war. Claudio with those that European smash mouth style to Pac's chaos of like high flying slash submissions. It works so well, mixed together so well, like a sofrito, like a salsa. It just worked so well. And although we kind of wanted Pac to kind of go over in this match because we felt like Claudio really wasn't doing that much with this title. I just felt like it was a prop more than like him carrying himself as a champion. It would have been nice to see Pac hold this and see what he could do with it. We did see Claudio get the win after interference with Wheeler Yuta. Is this feud over? Not too sure. Would you want to see this feud again? I would, but would you guys want to? That's the bigger question. And it's the bigger question now. Are we holding off Claudio losing the title for Mark Briscoe to come back and win that championship? I think that's what's going to happen, but it all depends on when he gets better and if he gets better as well, too. Dude's getting up there in age, and although he has been in wars with the unfortunate death of his brother, you know, in a lot more singles type matches, can Briscoe go the way he wants to go? We're going to have to see that going forward. But interesting match, with the dynamic. I would love to see another match as well, too. We'll see what happens. Our main event, for the first time ever in ROH history, two women get to main event a pay-per-view. And I couldn't be happier with the two women that are involved. We have the challenger being Willow Nightingale, former New Japan Strong Women's Champion. You know, the current Owen Hart Cup winner. Someone who has a victory over Athena as well, too, for that tournament final as well, too. Taking on the champion, the fallen goddess Athena, with a remarkable run, not only in ROH, but in AEW as well, too. You know, we had our thoughts about Athena, former Ember Moon, when she left the WWE, and how she would be treated, or how she would have maybe confidence issues going to another company. And we did see some struggle when she first arrived, but now look at her, a completely different character. And she is a character. She is very much like a Looney Tune, but it's great though. It fits what she's doing. The aggressiveness, the desperation, and the ferocity that is Athena is a total 360 over what she was as Ember Moon in NXT and the main roster. I thought the match was great. A lot of callbacks to former women champions or women ROH wrestlers at the time as well. Devastating moves, great false finishes. I think Willow is undeniably a genuine babyface. You cannot help but smile when she comes out. She is infectious. Having her family there helped as well too. But just seeing the East Coast girl in the East Coast venue get the love that she got was fantastic. And to see that, you know, Athena being portrayed as the real villain here only raised her stock. I do love the finish of the match. I mean, we saw so much happening from the top rope, Death Valley driver from Willow, to the multiple O faces that Athena provided, to the end segment of Athena latching on the crippler crossface and making Willow pass out instead of tap out, was a great, 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 great finish to the match. The only criticism I would say is that we saw so many pass out finishes throughout the night that did we really need another one? Like, maybe we could have done better earlier into the match, like knowing that this is going to be the segment, the final segment, the final thing you remember out of this match. Someone could have sacrificed that. We could have done something differently, right? But it still felt important. It was a history-making moment. Athena retains her championship, which I think was the right move. I think Willow will eventually get that strap or a strap that means like something of value, maybe a TBS title, maybe even the ROH title later on down the road. But for right now, the Queen of the Mountain for ROH is still Athena. She draws so many eyes to the product. She carries herself so well. Let me take one more sip. And that confidence is only going to raise her stock when she transitions back to the AEW roster, bringing that character to life there and establishing herself as a top heel. I think this only benefits both wrestlers, and amazing, 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 amazing. Match of the night really probably does go to one of those right there. If it has to be the main event or possibly the tag team match, it's hard. I think I sway with the tag team match a little bit because Aussie opened with their outstanding victory that no one saw coming. But then again, just the sheer importance for the main event as well too, that kind of drives a home run as well. So in all, how many turnbuckle slaps are we going to give this event? I'm going to give it three. I was going to be harsh on it and give it maybe a 2.5 because maybe some of the finishes or some of the matches. But for the end, at the end of the day, I enjoyed this pay-per-view from top to bottom. Felt important. Every title match felt good. A couple swerves, some storytelling. But things felt important. And this felt like a legit show. It didn't feel like a Impact pay-per-view. When we judged Impact pretty harshly for Slammiversary. And that's a pay-per-view that's very well known and well publicized as well too. You know, people were just scratching their head about this show for ROH and like, should I invest my time or not on a Friday night? You got your money's worth. This was a great, great, great event. And with the new regime with Tony Khan and AEW with ROH, I feel like the pay-per-views have been better. I can't speak for the week-to-week shows as much as I want to, but for my sake, every time I do watch them, they're pretty fun. It's just, I think the paywall is the biggest issue right there. But yeah, I'm gonna slap three turnbuckles. I think the main event was fire. I think the title matches were fire. I think we have a good direction going forward. I would just like to see more consistency with people just being on ROH and separating themselves from AEW's main roster. If we can get that, I'll be fine. Like, if we're gonna keep people like AR Fox and Leon Ruffin strictly for ROH, it works. That way, when the time is right to kind of refresh these characters, you can throw them back and forth to different companies, if you will. But that being said, that is the podcast right here, guys. I know we have a lot to talk about this week. We have Raw, NXT Fallout with that North American Championship. We have SmackDown Fallout. We have Great American Bash provided by NXT coming up next weekend as well too. So a lot of great things come our way. Hopefully you guys catch us next Sunday. Myself, Val Cisco, Lucha Val Cisco, if you will, Jay Rance. We thank you guys for joining us, for having a good time, for tuning in, if you will. Elite Wrestling Audio on Twitter, Instagram, Threads, I believe Facebook, and more. So look us up, comment us. If you want to throw some reviews as well too, maybe a couple stars or just ratings when it comes to the podcast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcast, iHeartRadio, Pandora, Amazon Music, and more. We're all over the place. So please give us your ratings. Let us know how you feel. And we appreciate every single one of us. Oh, TikTok. You guys have been phenomenal on TikTok as well, too. A lot of our fan base has grown up there. So we appreciate you guys so much for tuning in every Sunday, throughout the week, whenever you guys are listening. Thank you so much. We are out here. I am out here. Take care, guys. And until the next one, later.